say it slow. This is KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. You are listening to Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living, and you're listening to our radio program, Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. And today I have on with me our wonderful co-host, Camila Aguilar.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. I know that. I don't know why I blanked it. And she is an incredible community leader. She is a local artist, writer, and activist in San Francisco, and she moderates a community space called Community B. It's a gorgeous space with incredible trees. I love the energy in the space. Low-cost venue associated with, located in the industrial park of Potrero Hill, and has been there for 17 years. The studio is dedicated to launching new works of arts and performance, as well as meeting space for spiritual and social and political gatherings. And today we have her on, and she's brought one of these wonderful politically aware and activist people, and her name is Susan Lerner, and she's with the California Clean Money Campaign. And let's see if we can get her on. Susan, are you there?
I am.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure.
So maybe you can tell us exactly what this California Clean Money Campaign is all about.
Absolutely. We are a one-issue organization, and our mission is to build a broad base of support for bringing full public financing of elections here to California. Full public financing of elections is a system which is working today in Arizona and Maine. There they call it clean elections. Here we're calling it clean money. And it provides public money for citizens who show a broad base of support among the voters in their district to be able to run an effective and competitive election campaign.
Sounds just like what we need.
Well, we think so.
So I understand that this has been a movement not only here in California but in other states as well. Can you share with us any of the what's gone on with it so far and where the California piece of this is at this point?
Absolutely. First states to adopt a clean money system were Arizona and Maine, who have clean money available for their statewide and legislative races in both states. And the first election cycle where Arizona and Maine voters were able to vote for cleanly financed candidates was in 2000. So we've had three election cycles in those states. In North Carolina, this past November, voters were able to vote on judicial candidates for their appellate and Supreme Court races who were able to take advantage of full public financing and not have to raise money from the lawyers and corporations who appeared in front of their Supreme Court, which was a definite advance. There's a pilot program in New Jersey where two legislative districts, I believe in 2006, are going to provide full public financing to legislative candidates. And in New Mexico, they've adopted full public financing for their elected public utilities commission candidates. And I believe that that is going to have its first try in 2006. The city of Portland recently adopted full public financing for their city elections. And the voters in Albuquerque, New Mexico, are going to have an opportunity to adopt the system on the ballot in November 2006 to decide if they want to provide full public financing of elections for city candidates. Connecticut is very seriously looking at full public financing for its statewide and legislative races. A clean money bill passed through both houses of the legislature, slightly different versions. And so they are trying to blend the two and come up with a proposal which their Republican governor, Governor Rell, has promised to sign. We've also seen the legislature in Hawaii pass clean money legislation, and there they weren't able to come up with a conference committee version. And so we'll be going back to Hawaii next year to try and have their system adopt clean money. Here in California, we have a bill pending in the legislature, which is AB 583. The author is Democrat Lonnie Hancock from Berkeley, and your assembly member Mark Leno is one of the co-authors.
Thank you, Susan. That's quite a bit of momentum we've got so far, and it's really good news to hear that, because I don't know that campaign reform is always, it's got the greatest sex appeal when you bring it up in, you know, group creating movements towards sort of endeavors. A lot of times it just seems out of reach, and hearing how many places this has happened, I'm wondering if you have any impressions on why it's been so successful in some states and not others. Like, why is California sort of lagging here, it seems?
Well, the reason why it presents such a challenge in California is because we are the largest state with the most expensive media markets. What's really slowed it down, and which we are in the process of addressing, is to find the appropriate funding source. In a time of budgetary constraints, of massive deficits, it's difficult for some people to conceive of increasing a budgetary requirement for the state. Unfortunately, that's a very short-sighted approach, because what we see is that having cleanly elected officials means that they are able to make better budgetary choices and to resist the requests of special interests and large money donors who want to contribute to campaigns in order to get favors back from the government in the form of contracts or tax loopholes or other things that end up costing us all money.
A couple things, Susan. Firstly, it's a little hard to hear you because we have you on the air, so if you don't mind speaking up a little bit, that would be very helpful.
Sure.
And maybe we can just step back all the way to the beginning for somebody new that might be joining us, or for someone that's not really been involved too much in the political system before now. What are these special interest groups, and what is the challenge currently with the system? What's broken with the system right now?
Well, what's broken with the system is, most importantly, the people's faith in it. All you have to do is pick up the newspaper on virtually any day here in California to read about very upsetting instances of large campaign contributions, which create the appearance that the particular elected official then made a public policy decision based not on the what would be best for all Californians, but what seems to be based on a determination of, well, my large campaign contributor is for or against this particular measure. And while I personally believe that our elected officials, in major part, in almost every instance, are well-intentioned individuals trying to do the best that they can, for the majority of Californians, they are human beings, and they are more likely to be attentive to the people who've done them favors, like writing them $20,000 checks when they're running for office. It's not corruption per se. It's a very, I think, human response that you are just more open and more attentive to the people who help you out. They don't feel that the voters are supporting them in the same way, because of the really significant amounts of money which it takes to run for election here in California. So, in essence, our elected officials under our current system have two constituencies: the voters who elect them and the people who pay money to allow them to run for office. And when those two constituencies are in conflict, it puts a real strain on our system. The net result is that individual voters feel that their voices don't count nearly as much as the large money contributor. and they become very cynical and withdraw from the system. And that's the last thing that we want in a democracy, people who feel that it's not worth participating. And that's the most damaging aspect of our current funding system.
Mm-hmm. That really is what's broken in our system, it seems. And this is an interesting initiative in that it looks like in order for it to get across and to have success and gain some approval by voters, it's going to require a turnaround in that apathy and cynicism that has been widespread throughout our voting populace for a very long time. I'm wondering if you can speak to that a bit in terms of what the California Clean Money Initiative is working on in involving the average citizen. It seems like that's where we need to start, is to get more citizens demanding from our elected officials or candidates that they be interested in clean money.
Right. Well, as I said, our mission is to build a broad public consensus for full public financing here in California. So we work on a number of different levels, and of course grassroots participation is a very important part of what we do. We have opportunities for individuals to learn about how our proposal for full public financing clean money would work here in California. We train people to become speakers and community representatives to go out and actually inform groups of activists and concerned individuals about this voluntary alternative to the current corrupting political funding system. We have the opportunity for our volunteers to table at events, at farmers markets, at fairs, and other public events where there's an opportunity for the public to become knowledgeable. We urge our activists to visit with their elected officials and educate them directly to our proposal and to the bill that's pending in the legislature. We organize letter-writing campaigns to the editor. We also urge our volunteers to actually ask for and participate in meetings with the staff of various newspapers and other media outlets. And we have a very informative email list where we keep people up to date on what's happening around the state and throughout the country with the clean money proposals. I forgot to mention that just the day before yesterday here in Los Angeles, three council members introduced a motion to the LA City Council to have a study prepared developing a proposal to bring full public financing to Los Angeles' city elections. And there are a group of citizens down in San Diego, among the members of our organization, who are working to develop a proposal which they want to put on the ballot to provide full public financing for San Diego City elections. And as you know, in both Los Angeles, or you may not know, in both Los Angeles and in San Diego, the issue of pay-to-play campaign donations has figured very, very visibly in the recent election campaigns on the city level. And in San Diego, they had the unfortunate experience of having two of their council members indicted for taking illegal campaign contributions.
Wow. Susan, there are, like you said, most of the candidates, I'm sure, are well-intentioned individuals, and it's the way the system's set up, they almost need to participate this way in order to just even be able to participate in the system. Not that, I don't know if that's not necessarily an excuse for them, but just sort of the reality of the situation. How do you have any sense of how the candidates feel about having something? Would this be a relief to them, or would it take away some of the perceived power? I know that many times they spend quite a bit amount of time just trying to raise funds and don't really have as much time to actually pay attention to the policies and the bills and things like that. So do you have any sense or any information on how they feel about something like this?
Well, it's very interesting. I've had the opportunity to speak to several individuals who run as clean candidates in Arizona. One gentleman who had run under the traditional financing system and then ran as a clean money candidate, and member of their House of Representatives who has only had the experience of running as a clean money candidate, as well as some other elected officials, and all of them are passionate advocates for the clean money system. The gentleman who had run with traditional financing and then tried clean money said that it absolutely changed the way in which he conducted his campaign. And he found it to be a really wonderful change, which allowed him to spend time with the voters rather than spending time raising money. The current Democratic governor of Arizona, excuse me, Janet Napolitano, ran as a cleanly financed candidate, and she too is effusive in her comments regarding the difference that it made in her campaign and how much she enjoyed being able to actually get out and talk to the voters instead of spending all of her time and her words selling tickets to $250 rubber chicken dinners. And also elected officials who are cleanly financed candidates tell us that it changes their relationship with the constituents, that constituent calls go up after a candidate has run a clean election. What I was told by one elected official there in Arizona was, he said, when you go door to door in Arizona, the first thing that you're asked is, are you, what's your position on abortion? Because it's a very conservative state. And the second thing you are asked is, are you running clean? So the public there really, really likes the system. And elected officials really like it as well. 10 out of 11 statewide officials in Arizona are now cleanly financed. We're elected with public money. The majority, just a bare majority of the state legislature in Arizona is elected with public money. And in Maine, more than 80% of their legislature is cleanly elected.
Wow.
So once candidates understand the system, once elected officials understand how it works and have an opportunity to try it, they really, really like it.
Wow, it sounds like there would be a great benefit in having those elected officials from other states have networking with people from states that have not gone over yet.
And we're exactly doing that.
That's exciting. With the... you said that, I think you said 10 out of 11 or 11 out of 12 of the candidates in Arizona.
10 out of 11.
So is it a voluntary system?
It is.
Okay. What's the proposal in California? What are the specifics of how this system would work here?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is modeled after the system that is working successfully in Arizona and Maine with adjustments for the peculiarities of California's political climate, because after all, we are much larger than Arizona and Maine, and our districts are much larger, which requires a different emphasis. So it's not just a matter of taking the amount of money that they provide in Arizona and Maine and multiplying it by a factor of whatever the population difference is. We have looked at other aspects. For instance, here in California, we have seven smaller parties which have qualified for the ballot. Here in Arizona and in Maine, they have the two what are called major parties and then one additional party which is qualified. So we've needed to make some adjustments in our system to ensure that the candidates who are receiving the public money actually have a broad base of support, but not make it so difficult for smaller party candidates to receive public financing that they don't have the benefit of being able to get their word out to the voters. So what we've done here in California, and this is similar to Arizona and Maine, the way you get into the system as a candidate is that you show a broad base of support by raising $5 qualifying contributions from the voters in your district. So that means if you're running for an assembly seat in San Francisco, then the only people who can contribute the $5 qualifying contributions are registered voters in that district in San Francisco, not people from Mountain View, not people from Sacramento, only the people in the district. And the $5 qualifying contribution is backed by a signature card under penalty of perjury that identifies the contributor and their address, and a statement, I'm a registered voter in the district, this is my money, nobody's forcing me to contribute it or paying me back, and this is the only $5 qualifying contribution that I'm making in this race. Because you can't give your $5 qualifying contributions to five different candidates in the race. You need to make a choice to ensure that all of the candidates have a genuinely broad base of support in the district. Now, what we've done is we've set different levels for candidates who are either independent or who are running on behalf of parties which have polled less than 10% for that office in the immediate past election. Those candidates can qualify for the same amount of money if they gather double the amount of qualifying contributions. If they gather the same amount of $5 qualifying contributions as a party that has already polled 10% in previous elections, then they would get half the amount of money. And if they, they would get a smaller amount of money. And then if they gathered 50% of the qualifying signatures, they get 25% of the money. So even a smaller party that does not have a previous track record or a candidate that is running completely independently has the opportunity to get a significant amount of public funding and can receive as much public funding as a candidate from the majority party.
Just for everybody that's just tuning in, this is KPOO San Francisco 89.5. I'm Julie Matthews, and we have Camila Aguilar, and we are talking to Susan Lerner about the California, what's the official title here? California Clean Money Campaign, for all of you who just joined us. I'd like to just get a sense. I think there's some other proposals out there. I think McCain has something, and you know, sometimes what people do is say, oh, well, there's already something out there, you know, we don't need to spend our time on something else. What is that proposal, and how is this different?
Well, McCain-Feingold Act, which is a federal act that deals only with federal elections, so that's Congress, president, vice president, is very different from a full public financing system. It does not provide any money. It is what I think of as the traditional form of campaign finance reform, and that is an effort to put a lid on the contributions, set contribution levels or limits, limit the types of contributions, the contributions that can be made to specific organizations or parties, and basically generally just try and hold the amount of money down. As we've seen, unfortunately, while that was a very well-intentioned effort, traditional forms of campaign finance reform just have not managed to really address the problem. And if anything, some people would argue have exacerbated it, because the money now is going in unexpected directions with unintended consequences, and rather than the candidates controlling the election process or the voters controlling the election process, we now have all kinds of independent entities from the Swift Boat veterans to America Coming Together that are pouring huge amounts of money into campaigns without any coordination or actual responsibility to anybody other than their donors. And so it's been a well-intentioned, but I would argue very failed effort to try and reform our election system and its and campaign costs.
Now, Susan, it sounds like this approach of public financing is radically and fundamentally different from what has been broadly proposed to voters presently and in the past. And I know in a previous conversation you'd mentioned that there is a collaborative or participation with a coalition of groups that are aiming toward election reform in one way or another. Can you tell us a little more about that? Like how is clean money tied in toward this bigger picture of what it sounds to me like the ultimate goal is to get more voter responsibility, actually?
Absolutely. Well, the ultimate goal is to have an open, efficient, and responsive California government that people have faith in and that people participate in and that it addresses the needs of all Californians. That's the ultimate goal. I mean, that's what our election system exists for. It's elections are a means to an end, and I think we have to keep in mind that the end is the kind of government that we all want and that we all deserve. So the question is, how do you use election reforms to ultimately ensure that the government functions the way that you want it to? And so we are a member of several different coalitions. We lead a coalition that looks specifically at campaign finance reform issues. We're a member of coalitions among like-minded groups that look at other aspects of the electoral system to see what can we do, what can we change to improve the accountability and responsiveness and openness of California government. So, you know, we're in coalition with groups like the League of Women Voters, the Green Lining Institute, Southwest Voters Education, Registration and Education Project, CalPERG, California Common Cause, California Now, the California Sierra Club, and other groups that are interested in ensuring that California's government functions the way California's people believe it should function.
Great. Those are all the names you've come across in your mailbox if you do any donations at all. Sounds like good representation. I'm curious, it sounds like there is a strong coalition orientation. A lot of times, for instance, as a donor, if you know about one group, you don't know about their affiliations one with the other, and it has been represented in the past, often groups are competing for the same funds. And I'm wondering if this is sort of a sideline. If you are observing a more collaborative existence amongst members of the coalition where...
Well, that's certainly what we're trying to achieve. You know, after all, we are a one-issue organization, and we exist because this issue of campaign finance reform, and particularly of full public financing of elections, is an issue which many of our coalition partners care deeply about, but find that they don't have the resources to concentrate on as directly as they would like to. And so we exist in order to create a strategy which will help all of the groups and organizations that are interested in seeing this idea move forward be able to cooperate together and move this idea to the ballot with a broad base of support with an appropriate time frame.
Great. I am curious on a personal level. I know you have some background in being an executive director for other things prior to California Clean Money Campaign, the abortion reproductive rights south, and I'm just wondering how you personally get engaged and inspired to work on something that is such a broad vision and takes, I imagine, a lot of one vision and a lot of belief to get behind.
Well, I've been an activist for pretty much my entire life in the pro-choice community, in the women's community, in the legal community, working on a number of different issues. And one thing that's become increasingly clear to me is that without systemic change that really helps us have elected officials who are committed to the kind of governance ideals that I was just talking about, None of the issues that I have worked on and that I know my colleagues work on, environment, civil rights issues, eliminating poverty, dealing with affordable housing, will progress as well and as readily as they should because of the warping influence which campaign donations and large money donors have on our system. So one of the things that we sometimes talk about when we talk about clean money is that clean money is the reform that makes all other reforms possible. And so we're finding that an increasing number of our activists and members are people who have worked for decades in some instances on individual issues that are very, very close to their hearts. But they've come to the conclusion that until they reform the system, until we have a legislature and elected officials whose primary and if not sole allegiance is to the voters and to what's best for all Californians, the issue that they've devoted so much time, energy, and passion to simply will not be as successful as it needs to be. And that's how I come to this issue.
So it really is keystone in the whole voter engagement process and also public accountability. It's sort of the seed from which all other endeavors stem. I am curious about, for people who are really new to this issue, I think public funds, sometimes the idea is not clear enough and you kind of get a heel digging in sort of reaction when you bring that up to a group without having some sort of explanation for, you know, what does that mean, how does it work, who controls it. Could you give us a little more information on what public funds means?
Well, what public funds means is that the people, not the special interests, pay for elections. And there are various different ways of funding it. In Arizona, they fund their clean election system with a surcharge on criminal and civil penalties. So if someone, for instance, has to pay a fine for violating the environmental protection laws with a polluted discharge from a factory or an incorrect disposal of poisonous materials, then a small percentage is added to that amount, and that addition goes into the Clean Money Fund. In Arizona, they fund it through an allocation from, you know, their general fund. Here in California, what we're recommending is not an allocation from the general fund, which the legislature would have to renew every year, because we don't want Californians to be concerned that having clean, publicly funded elections would be in competition with other important governmental budget items like education or transportation. We're recommending that there be a designated funding source of money that does not currently go into the general fund, like a surcharge on criminal and civil penalties, or a fee that on oil that's removed from the soil here in California, that would be dedicated to funding clean money up to the amount that's needed on an annual basis, and then any excess amount would go into the general fund. So we recommend a designated funding source so that people don't feel that they have to be making hard budgetary choices.
Susan, to me, the voters, at least myself, I'm thinking, yes, this is a no-brainer. I'm guessing that since it hasn't happened yet, or so far it hasn't, just didn't freely pass very quickly, and it seems like there might be some obstacles, and I'm curious what those obstacles might be. My perception is that while California can be liberal in some respects, it seems to be fairly fiscally conservative and probably has quite a bit of big corporate sponsorship, and I'm curious, what are some of those obstacles that you are finding that you're going to need to overcome in order to get this through?
Well, first is just being sure that people understand the system, how it actually works. A lot of either lack of familiarity with this as a viable alternative, or people who are familiar with it don't really understand how it would work. Often they don't understand that it's voluntary. Nobody can be forced to accept private money, to accept public money, and that the traditional means of fundraising can continue for people who don't want to take public money. Often it's a question of hostility on the part of business interests or others who have used this mechanism to gain access and to gain what is perceived as an advantage in getting what they want out of our elected officials and out of government. For some people, it is a difference in principle. They just don't believe in providing government money for virtually anything. And so they certainly don't want to provide government money for election purposes. But mostly we find it's people who are afraid that if we change the system, that somehow or other their access will be limited, and in some instances, they're right. What we're looking to do is level the playing field so that the large pharmaceutical companies, so the large oil companies, so that other moneyed interests are on the same playing field and have exactly the same voice as every other constituency here in California, that they can't overshout the voice of the electorate and get what they want out of government that way, that they're going to have to persuade elected officials on the strength of their ideas and on the objective good that would result from the proposals that they ask a legislature to adopt. And that frightens those interests.
Mm-hmm. As it should. I've got a question about AB 583. When I checked the website, it looked like there were a couple individuals who blocked its passage. One of the issues held by Johan Claes was insistence on no limitations on public spending, and yet he himself was a victim of the present system. And I'm wondering if he has suggested remedies for the Clean Money campaign, or if he is just flat out against it because of that issue.
Well, you know, it's Representative Assemblymember Claes really presents an interesting situation. He says that he is a clean money supporter, yet at the same time he demands that there can be no limits on the amount of money which the public should spend to match millionaire candidates. Even though he is a member of the Assembly Revenue and Taxation Committee and knows that there is absolutely no public funding of anything which is a blank check. Nobody writes a blank check with public money. I don't care whether it's for education, transportation, health care. It just does not happen. What needs to occur and what we hope will occur is that Assemblymember Claes will sit down with us and explain what his concerns are and make constructive, tangible suggestions of how we can improve our bill to address his concerns, but not to continually insist that the public has to write a blank check to match any billionaire who chooses to run for office on a dollar-for-dollar basis. He was asked at a hearing at the Elections Committee, if a wealthy candidate put $1 billion into their race, would the public have to match that $1 billion? And he said not only would they, absolutely, they would be obligated to match that $1 billion. But when we've asked him, well, where is the funding going to come from to match $1 billion, he has basically had no response. So what we're hoping is that he will calm down a little bit and think through what he is actually suggesting and sit down with us and help improve and strengthen our proposal. If he feels that it does not provide sufficient matching funds to deal with certain situations, then we're open to revisions. What we can't accept is a blank check. So we are constantly looking to strengthen our proposal to make it more practical, but not to simply pour huge amounts of money into campaigns, because as any elected official will tell you, if you raise more money, the money will get spent. It won't necessarily result in better communications with the voter, but give campaign consultants more money, they'll find ways to spend it. What we're looking for is the right amount to fund to ensure that all candidates who take public money can effectively get their word out to the voters and communicate with them persuasively, not to match the maximum amounts of money which have been poured into campaign funds and campaign costs, because in all honesty, it doesn't improve the communication with the voter.
Yeah, it sounds like it's not really, what he's proposing does not have the solution that clean money is after, and in a way he's not really understanding what clean money is about.
Exactly, and I don't want to pick on him alone. I mean, there are other elected officials who have that concern. And there's no question that when you're running for office, your worst nightmare is a rich, personally funded candidate who seems to have endless deep pockets. But it requires, I think, an understanding of how elections do work and how they can work. One of the things that we've learned from our colleagues in Arizona is that having a clean money system, which after all is an alternative to traditional financing, over time changes the whole way in which the election process works. More and more people run clean, even if they have a personal fortune, because as I pointed out earlier, it's important to the voters. And if an individual candidate finds that they are facing a billionaire opponent who can pour limitless amounts of money into the campaign, they are perfectly free to continue raising money in the traditional way. So if they feel that the amount of public money that would be provided is not enough for their race, they can try and match the rich candidate dollar for dollar. And there's nothing to prevent them from doing that. And we have clean money supporters in Arizona who have done exactly that. They're incumbents. They find that they have a very wealthy opponent who they know is going to spend much more than the clean amounts provided by the public. And they've gone to their supporters and they've gone to their constituents and they've said, I'm not deserting clean money, but I have this one instance where I'm going to need more money than the public provides. And once I'm past this, I'll be back in the clean money system. And they've been successful in their races in convincing the public that they had a situation where they had a one-time instance where they wanted to use traditional financing. So the argument that because clean money won't provide $8 million or $1 billion to compete against a wealthy privately funded candidate, and therefore no one should have the benefits of clean money, is frankly just a conundrum to me. Why would anybody take that position? Since it won't work perfectly in my one situation, mm-hmm. I don't want anybody else to have it. It just seems to be very, very short-sighted, and a position that I hope that we can get elected officials who seem to be stuck in this rut of perfection out of. Because no system will be perfect. There will be some situations where, with our best efforts, it won't work exactly the way we want it. Not everybody in every race will be able to take advantages of the benefit of the system. But over time, there's no question that this definitely makes a real difference and improves our election system.
Susan, I don't want to pin you down to a specific date, but do you have any general sense of how long you think it would take California to create this situation? Are we talking a year? Are we talking 5 years? Are we talking 10 years? Do you have any kind of general sense on how big of a hurdle or process this is?
Well, our immediate goal is AB 583 is a 2-year bill. That means that it has not been defeated in the legislature. It has been slowed down a bit, but it has not been defeated. And we will be back in front of the Elections Committee in 2006, and our goal is to see if we can get it passed through the legislature in 2006, which would place it on the, and signed by the governor, which would place it on the ballot in 2006. If we're not successful in this second attempt to have the legislature clean up its own campaign act, then at the end of the session, we're going to sit down and evaluate where we are and whether it's time to go directly to the ballot through petition gathering in 2008. But I want to emphasize that there is no point in putting a measure on the ballot that we do not feel we have either the public support or the appropriate financial resources to be successful in convincing a majority of Californians to support.
Do we have any sense of how the governor feels about this?
The governor has not given us a strong response one way or the other. We've had people who've talked to his staff about campaign finance and about this, and we've gotten a very vague response. Well, he's interested in campaign finance reform, but not this year. Given his current problems with his personal finances, and given his positions during the recall election, we remain optimistic that the governor will understand that he would be an excellent advocate for full public financing of elections, and it fits very well with the positions he took during his election campaign and unfortunately seems to have forgotten about since he's taken office.
Speaking of election promises, I have this idea that I don't know if it's really feasible, but I'm going to throw it out because I think it's a great idea. I'm thinking of an online scorecard where people could go to a website and just very easily see how their candidates actually voted on issues versus what they said that they were going to do. Because I think a lot of times we, you know, we're so busy we don't necessarily see it. And I think it probably would be pretty easy and not very expensive or time-consuming to just take a list of those reports of how people voted and have them up on a website. So candidates can actually start being responsible for how they're voting versus how they're telling the public. Because most people just say, oh, they said that they weren't going to do this and they were going to do that, and then they never do any of it. And anyway, that's just my kind of personal little piece of something I think would also be very helpful for our system here.
Creating structure to enable more accountability.
Right. So we are just about out of time. I want to give a way that people can get a hold of you. Do you have a website?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that your listeners will find a lot of good, solid background information about the clean money concept and about our organization and how they can become involved on our website, which is www.caclean.org.
Great. Well, Susan, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you.
Great. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was fascinating. Something that I feel is just so important. I'm just really interested in seeing how the voters feel about it, because while it seems like a no-brainer to me, sometimes you just don't know what the perceptions out there in the rest of the state are.
My feeling is the biggest obstacle I would view is the apathy within the general voter populace,
mm-hmm.
and just being able to get this kind of information across in a very simple way so it's soundbite graspable. So,
right.
Because I think some of the things that turned my head around about it was seeing the video, which can be viewed online, and seeing how the candidates who have been elected through clean money in Arizona and Maine, the way they speak about it, you know, really seeing vision and showing themselves benefiting and having a belief in our system. We need more role models for turning around the tide of apathy.
Sure. And I completely agree, and I'm hoping that a lot of times I think the people that are apathetic are so because they think they have no power and that the system's corrupt. So maybe if a system is presented that would help them feel more empowered, maybe they would be less apathetic.
It would give hope to people. And I know personally my experience seeing a lot of political groups come through Studio B, a lot of people who have come through were formerly activists who burned out, and which is a common thing that happens, and their cynicism is very much hinged on this broken system.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a sense of hope will bring back a lot of people, I think.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
So how do people get a hold of you, Studio B, if they...
For more information on Studio B, being able to make use of the space or for performance or meeting space, I can be reached at 415-255-9794. And email is pixlcam, that's pixelcam, at copper, copper.net.
Great. Thanks, Camila.
Thanks.
It was great today.
Yeah.
I'm Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living, and this is our show Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. Listen to us every Thursday at noon. Thanks for listening.
I promise I'll do it again. I promise I'll do it. You can't say I don't love you just because I cheat on you.